Hello everyone, hello football fans around the world. Welcome to the Squawker Talker. Fans of the regular Friday podcast will notice that I'm not Greg Johnson. My name is Nick English, of course. Greg and I have switched pods. We've just done it. We just decided, let's mix it up, let's switch pods. But that is not to say that we're not going to have a great time and cover off a lot of football, as we always do on the Squawker Talker. Joining us today is Mohamed Butt, features writer here. Hello, Mohamed.
Hello, Nick.
How's it going?
It's pretty fantastic, yeah.
Pretty fantastic.
Yesterday was some good stuff.
Good stuff yesterday. Okay, well, we'll get into that in a minute. Also joining us is Helen Rowe Wilcox from PA. Hello, Helen. How are you doing?
Hi, how are you doing? I'm good, thank you. You okay?
Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Excellent. Also joining us, Hush Karoy. Hello, Hush.
Hello, Nick.
How's things?
Lovely. Lovely to be back on the pod.
Yeah. You love coming on, don't you?
I do, yeah. It's good fun. It's always good fun.
Some people are really good but a little bit reticent, and you're just always really enthusiastic to come on.
Yeah, well, that's something that I get a lot, really. So.
Okay. Well, it was very difficult to get a Liverpool fan on today, and I'll tell you why. It's because they've all gone into hiding. Yeah, they lost to Southampton in their second league EFL Cup. Southampton reached the EFL Cup final, Mo, without conceding a single goal. The first team since Spurs to do that in 1981, 1982 in the English League Cup. Are they deserved finalists? Claude Puel looked ecstatic.
Yeah, no, they really have been. I mean, what's really impressive about that run, the not conceding goal thing, okay, look, they did it in the previous rounds, but they have, or had, probably the best centre-back pairing maybe in the country after Spurs with Font and Van Dijk. That was great. The amazing thing was, against Liverpool, Font didn't play at all. Van Dijk played one game. Maya Yoshida, who is the epitome of a backup centre back, played out of his mind both games against Liverpool, and this young guy Jack Stevens, his incredible performance last night, had Daniel Sturridge in his back pocket. It's a really impressive. They really were solid defensive. They were organised so well. They still have a problem. They can't finish chances. They can't finish chances off. It takes them way too many shots to get a goal, but. As a team, organisationally, what Claude Puel has been instilling in them is starting to bear fruit, is starting to click through to the players. They're very worthy side, and they're going to keep getting, as long as they don't get strip-mined of their players. I mean, you know, Liverpool might be hovering again, you know.
Again.
Yeah. But as long as they don't get strip-mined, I think they'll keep rising. They're really well organised.
Yeah, it's Helen, it's what a lot of pundits have been saying, especially the analytics community. They've been saying that Saints are much better than we've been saying. I mean, Redmond looked excellent yesterday, so did Jack Stevens. Josh Sims with an unbelievable assist off the bench. I mean, really impressive.
Yeah, I think Saints have kind of been getting some bad press, especially Puel, from Saints fans as well, for the sheer fact that they're classing it as boring football. But it seems in the league, they just seem to have got it right. And in the Cup, they just, well, can't seem to stop winning. And it is great to see that finally kind of what Puel's wanting to get into the team, and the fact that he's using the youngsters mixed in with the experienced players, just seems to be working so well.
Hush, Liverpool look absolutely exhausted, somewhat listless, you might say. Awful January, I think Liverpool fans are just writing it off. 0 wins from 7 games. It's the same thing in common every time. They seem to struggle to break teams down, and everyone knew it was coming yesterday. Southampton were going to sit deep. They were going to deploy Yoshida. If there's such a thing, he's not a missile, but you know, they deployed Yoshida, and they just can't seem to break teams down, can they?
No, it just didn't work for them yesterday. Romelu and Stephen Davis played a big role in that win, sort of making sure that target wasn't sort of, you know, the young defender wasn't exposed as he might have been. But again, Liverpool, yeah, didn't really make any chances over the two legs. Even though, if you didn't watch the match, the stat that, you know, Southampton haven't conceded on this run sort of gives the impression that they sat back and absorbed pressure for a lot of it. But over the two legs, they had 6 or 7 chances to score the goals, and Liverpool just didn't. So, if anything, Southampton should have won it sooner rather than when they did. And in terms of problems Liverpool have, I think Chan and Henderson, as opposed to Romelu and Davis, there's no chemistry there. There's no understanding. When Wijnaldum's not playing, it seems to be too ad hoc, and everything's channeled through the middle. When with Mane out and Firmino moving out wide to make room for Sturridge, the wide areas weren't used particularly well. Milner had a really bad game. It's possibly the sort of match where Moreno should be playing, because he's the type of he's the type of defender that he creates chances. I think it's only 4 players at Liverpool have created more chances than him this season. So, yeah. that's the type of game where he's not going to be sort of penned back in his own half, where he needs to, you know, that's why he's useful, otherwise what's the point of having him?
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. Liverpool's problem is essentially when teams just, you know, Liverpool are essentially a transit counter-attacking team. They play, they press, they attack. And when teams don't give them any room behind to do that, they sometimes look like, what do we do now? Like, Klopp is, I think, clearly trying to give them this. I mean, if you notice, there's been a marked lack of pressing from Liverpool recently in recent games. They've not really had that same sort of intensity they usually do. And I think it's almost Jurgen Klopp's deliberate attempt to try and make the team evolve, because Liverpool are, you know, this isn't the Bundesliga. Teams aren't going to come out and attack you. Like, teams are going to play Liverpool by just sitting back and defending. So Liverpool have to learn how to break teams down like that. And I think the thing is, they don't know yet, and Klopp is still figuring out himself, I think, how to do that. You can see, you know, he's definitely deploying these teams where he wants to try and figure it out, but, you know, it's so hard because the squad is built, it's the team especially, is built to play high-intensity pressing football. And when they don't do that, sometimes, you know, there's only one or two players they have who are really sharp enough to play in a sort of more relaxed manner and still have the same penetration.
I think the thing is, people seem to have now worked out how Liverpool were trying to play. Yeah. So, and they haven't got any ideas now of what to do once they've worked out how to play them. Like the Palace game earlier in the season, Liverpool were superb, but every single manager's now watched that game and gone, well, this is how we stop them doing that. And they haven't got anything to come back with.
It's a very interesting point. I mean, Jamie Carragher after the game was scathing in his assessment of Daniel Sturridge in particular, who seems to be incapable of breaking, of being useful when a team is sitting deep. We saw it at the Euros as well, especially against Iceland. He said it's like playing with 10 men, playing Daniel Sturridge. That's a bit harsh, isn't it?
Yeah, he was brutal, but brutally honest, really, because he was saying that Sturridge, is, without trying to be too harsh, has sort of turned into a one-trick pony now, where his only quality that Liverpool sort of can use is his finishing ability inside the box. He can't run the channels like he used to. He just doesn't trust his body like he did two, three seasons ago. I think Carragher compared him to Michael Owen after his injury and how his career sort of, you know, changed, his style of play changed. He just does not get in behind. And in that sense, he can't play any of the wide roles like he used to with Sterling and Suarez a couple of seasons back. So that meant that Firmino, who's really carved out a really good position in the centre, he was moved that wide. Sturridge was sort of accommodated up front, couldn't get into the game. He was coming so deep. He was on the halfway line picking up the ball on some stages.
Yeah, Sturridge is the kind of player who if you look at it just talent-wise, is brilliant. He's really talented, but he's always had a problem. Even when he was at his like flying best, like in 2014, he's always had a problem fitting in system play, because he's primarily a goal scorer. He looks to score goals. He's very selfish in many ways, but without that selfishness, he doesn't do something like, for example, win Liverpool the game against Villarreal in the Europa League semi-final last year. You know, without that selfishness, he doesn't do those match-winning moments. So it's not even really, you can't even say it's a problem with Sturridge. I mean, yeah, he doesn't make the runs into the channels anymore, but the kind of striker he still is, it's still fundamental. It's still something that a lot of teams in the Premier League would kill for. He's a goal scorer. He's a born goal scorer. You know, he just needs regular games, regular rhythm. The thing is, he's not going to get that at Liverpool, because even if he plays two, three games in a row, it's this kind of system. It's a kind of role that it just completely opposite with what he's good at. It's just not a good fit. He should leave in this window, frankly.
Unlikely that's going to happen. Helen, Klopp now has a worse record than Louis van Gaal, weirdly enough, after the same number of games. At least it was, I think, around about this time that van Gaal started his draw odyssey, something which has never been matched since and probably never will be. Is there cause for concern for Jurgen Klopp or Liverpool fans? I mean, it would have been unreal if they'd won the title, but they seem to be definitely very strong top four candidates. Should Liverpool fans be worried? No?
I don't think they should necessarily be worried. I think Klopp needs to kind of realise that things don't quite work in the Premier League that have worked for him in the past. So he needs to maybe come up with a few more ideas of, when they are losing, ways of coming back and going, oh no, this is what we can do now to kind of give the players a bit more confidence that when their system works, they have got other options of what they can do. And I think that's kind of where the problem is now, that Klopp's he seems to have halted in his ideas, and he's not 100% sure of what to do next. I think that's probably, there is a slight cause for concern, but it's not like they're going to suddenly drop completely down the Premier League anytime soon.
Ironic almost that Liverpool let go Christian Benteke, he'd be a perfect plan B for them. Liverpool hosh next have Wolves in the FA Cup, and then they've got Chelsea in the Premier League. So if you suspect if they lose both of those games, it's a bit of season overtime in some ways, isn't it?
Yeah, it would be very, very sobering for Liverpool fans if they lose both of those. And I can see an upset against Wolves because...
No.
You see,
it's Klopp, the Shea Ojo derby.
It's the Shea Ojo derby.
Which we're all looking forward to.
Klopp's very, you know, he rotates heavily in cup competitions, as we've seen so far this season. And, you know, the exertions they put out last night, he probably is going to make quite a lot of changes. And Wolves, they're not flying or anything, but they've come off a derby win against Aston Villa a few weeks back, which will... have gained confidence for them. Paul Lambert slowly putting his imprint onto the team. So, yeah, if you've got, you know, a cheeky few quid about, put something on Wolves because that could happen.
Helen, you can't be backing that. Wolves no. to turn over no, away from home?
No, I do think Liverpool will probably win it. But I think it'll probably be harder than people are expecting it to be. But I think they showed last time that they've got some really good youngsters that actually loved going out in the FA Cup. And so even if the experienced players don't play, I think they'll still have enough to do Wolves.
Mo, Southampton next have Arsenal in the FA Cup, fourth
always
round.
A good game.
Always a good game. Southampton have a great record against Arsenal. Almost beat them early in the season. They also knocked Arsenal out of the League Cup with ridiculous ease. But Arsenal have an incredible FA Cup record, so it would be quite a surprise if they got knocked out at this stage.
I'd be surprised. Yeah, Arsenal don't tend to go out in this stage of the FA Cup. And more to the point, I think Arsene Wenger, after his... whatever that was at the weekend, I think he needs to sort of remind everyone, hey, you know what, I'm still a very good football manager, my team plays very good football. I think, and Arsenal need a bit of a lift. I think Arsenal need a bit, you know, they're playing well, or getting good results rather, I should say, rather than playing well. And it's like they need something to sort of spark them, you know what I mean? And I think Liverpool, also the fact that, frankly, you can't sit deep against Arsenal as well as you could against Liverpool, and it won't work. So I think Southampton have to play Arsenal differently. And I think if they come out and attack, obviously Alexis Sanchez, Mesut Ozil will then hurt them. But I think Olivier Giroud is a big, you know, have a big part to play. I think against this young centre back, against Maya Yoshida, you know, Van Dijk's not going to make the game. I don't think they'll be able to live with Giroud. I think Arsenal will probably they'll probably take it like 1-0, 2-1, something. It won't be a very interesting game. Arsenal aren't playing thrilling football right now, but I think Arsenal will step up and, you know, get the win.
Good, I like a detailed prediction. I like that. We should note at this point that we're recording this on Thursday for logistical reasons. So we don't know what's happened in Hull versus Man United, but we're going to talk about it a little bit. Marco Silva, hush, wants Hull to win it for Ryan Mason. We should note Ryan Mason is awake, chatting, recovering slowly. He's got family and friends. All good news on that front. The problem for Marco Silva wanting Hull to win it for Ryan Mason is they've got a paper-thin squad and a 2-0 deficit. So it's a bit of a foregone conclusion against probably the best squad in the Premier League.
Yeah, you'd have to say this result sort of is already made, because even in the first leg, they performed quite decently, but still never, ever looked like scoring a goal. And United were just knocking on the door again and again and again. And they only got 2 goals to show for it, but it could have been a lot more from the first leg. So... yeah, you can't really see Hull turning it around. I think the only points of interest might be what sort of team Mourinho plays, because there's been a lot of talk about Anthony Martial not being in the squad over the weekend. If he's not involved on Thursday night, then serious questions will be answered. Or asked, rather.
Not answered.
Luke Shaw's back in training this week. And if he's not involved in any sort of capacity again, it sort of... another sort of week goes by and he's not getting anywhere near Mourinho's team. So
More questions.
No answers. So I think from a United perspective, what sort of selection Mourinho picks will be very interesting. From Hull's perspective, it'll be a great time for the sort of fans and the team to rally around Ryan Mason. But yeah, I really can't see them doing anything much more than that.
Fair enough. Okay.
I think that as nice as it would be for Hull to win and to have a kind of nice story after everything that happened with Ryan Mason, Hull have never actually beaten United in 13 meetings.
Wow.
So I can't really see it happening this time.
Omens are against them.
Yeah.
Let's move to some European Cup action, actually. And the big shock, Mo, was in the Copa del Rey, Celta Vigo beating Real Madrid. It was a draw on the night, but they won it on aggregate. A bit of a crisis point for Zidane. Obviously, they had that 40-game unbeaten run, but it's a shock exit from Copa del Rey. They lost against Sevilla.
Yeah.
Zidane's tried it. They've got an injury crisis, which has to be said.
Yeah.
But there's still some really good players in that.
And they've got the best squad in the world, so even their injury crisis is still not that bad. I mean, they still managed to start Isco, Cristiano Ronaldo, Karim Benzema, Toni Kroos, Sergio Ramos last night.
Not bad.
You know.
But they did have Casemiro alongside Sergio
Ramos.
They did.
Is
it crisis point for Zidane? I mean, does he need to start getting worried? Because his tactical tweaks based off the injury crisis haven't really worked at all.
No, I mean, he's played this 4-3-3 since he came in, and then his one shift, which was in the Atletico Madrid game, which just got to a 4-4-1-1, which really worked. It was really, really smart use of his squad, of his players. He put Isco behind the striker, behind Ronaldo, and they just tore Atletico to bits on the break. But that was largely built on the running and ability of Lucas Vazquez and Gareth Bale. Now, last night he tried a 3-5-2. It was more of like a 3-3-1-3. It was very like reminiscent of what Julian Lopetegui has been using with Spain recently. Mm-hmm. Ramos was playing like right centre back, but also right back, but also like right wing back. It was really a bold and adventurous from Zidane. But it was like he deployed the system without actually thinking about how his team would do it, because they didn't play it the way you should play it. They had more men in the middle of the park than Celta, but they didn't. Play in the middle of the park. They didn't move the ball quickly, and they had to draw the markers in and then play out wide to expose them on the flanks with overlapping runs. It was just like they had the ball and they were just, okay, we're good players, we'll figure this out. And they didn't figure it out, because
I think that's a core philosophy of Zidane's management, isn't it? I mean, we've got good players, let's win the game.
That basically has been what it is, but he's now trying these tactical tweaks. But honestly, I think it's mostly just surface. I mean, this was the first time really since Wolfsburg away that his back up against, well, they lost the home leg, which is weird. I mean, it came straight after the Sevilla loss in the league. And then, you know, they were very lucky to not lose to Sevilla in the second leg in the last round. They came back to draw right in the last minute. And this game, it was just, they came into it, they lost the home leg, they needed to win. It's not easy to win in Balaidos. But Madrid did win their 3-1 in late 2015, so they've done it recently, but they just didn't have any idea. And I think going forward, he just needs a win. He needs a convincing win, because even their win against the weekend was not convincing. It was 2-1, and frankly, the second goal was...
Streaky.
Well, it was offside, you know. So I mean, you know, it was
La Liga officiated.
Well, yeah, they need.
I did inverted commas with my hands. You can't see that on the podcast. But
they need a convincing win over someone. They need to just and they've got Real Sociedad the week. I mean, they it's a problem point for Zidane. It's a tricky run of
spell.
Games. Luka Modric is injured, and that's huge. They really miss Luka Modric and Marcelo, and I think without those two, it could spiral into some.
Quick word on Barcelona. Nonsense. Again, the game's being played tonight. We're recording the night before. Expecting a win there.
Yeah, they won one in Anoeta, but they usually lose in Anoeta. They haven't won since 2007 until they won there last week. You know, Luis Enrique, contrary to Zidane, Luis Enrique is rotating his squad very well now. MSN are in really good form. They're all flying now. Neymar's finally scoring goals again. I think they'll win. I think they'll win pretty handsomely. They usually do against Real Sociedad at the Camp Nou.
Interesting. The other big game in domestic cup action around Europe was Juve 2, Milan 1. Juve took early control, scoring 2 goals in the first half. Bakka got one back. Really good strike, actually, if you get the chance to see it. And then Manuel Locatelli, one of the golden boys, got a second yellow, and that just kind of put things to bed. Juve looking odds on for another domestic treble.
Yeah, Juve just sort of marching on as always, really. They don't really drop, let alone lose matches. They don't even draw matches at home. So in the cup,
even a PR disaster can't.
Yeah,
can't
even a dodgy logo won't sort of get them off the tracks. But Milan is the story here, really, because everyone expected Juve to win, on course for another treble, as you say. But Milan went a few goals behind at Napoli last week, and again went a few goals behind against Juve. But they're finally trying showing the sort of collective spirit that we haven't seen for a couple of seasons at the San Siro. Vincenzo Montella, sort of the younger players have got a sort of chemistry about them, where they're not just sort of, you know, hanging up their boot, giving up results when it goes against them. There's signs of something building there. It's just going to take a while because it is such a young collection of players. But I think it was, can't say a promising loss, but signs of improvement for Milan, which is, I guess, good for the league, because it's been Juventus pretty much riding solo to the title and to the cups the last couple of seasons, and it's not been very interesting. And Milan shows some signs of resurgence.
Yeah, no, looking forward to seeing that how it develops. Catch us again in 2 years. keep listening. FA Cup fourth round this weekend, Helen. Big. Big. It's big. Don't ignore the Crystal Palace versus City. First game we're gonna cover off here. A chance to see Gabriel Jesus for Man City, which should be good. He looked good against Spurs. But I don't think Big Sam will be pretty interested in winning this. Do you think?
Big Sam, as much as he probably doesn't really care too much about the FA Cup this year, they are looking more on survival. At the same time, maybe does want to win this. They've not exactly been great at home. So it would be nice to kind of get a win under their belt and go...
stem the tide.
Yeah. And just something for the fans to kind of get behind as well. So they need some... there is a serious need for confidence in that squad. Mm. So surely winning any sort of game, whatever it... saying if it's in the FA Cup, it's in the league or whatever, they need to just get a win under the belts and start kind of turning it around.
Yeah, that should be good. Mo, Gabriel Jesus will probably get 90 minutes, got a run out against Spurs. Yeah. Guardiola obviously sees him as the modern alternative to Aguero up front. It should be really interesting to see him against one of the weakest back lines in the Premier League.
I mean, he's been very diplomatic in the way he's spoken about it. He said, he can play the wing, he can play up front, but I'm going to use him off the striker. He doesn't want to push Aguero out. But, I mean, you watch Aguero play for Man City against anyone that's even halfway decent, and you're like, yeah, Gabriel Jesus will get rid of you, mate. Mm. You know, so it's... I don't think he'll...
get in the bin, Sergio.
I think he'll probably start, probably get a good chunk of minutes. It'd be really interesting to see how he plays, how he fits in. Because one thing you will say about England, and I mean, you know, cliches aside, when it is an FA Cup tie, the players do go a bit harder. And the referees tend to let the smaller players go a little bit harder. So, yeah. I mean, you talk about baptisms of fire for your first appearance, you're coming on against Spurs.
FA Cup game away at Selhurst Park.
And then your first start, FA Cup game away. I mean, that's, you know...
Yeah, it'll that's be, tasty.
Interesting to see how he copes with it. Because, I mean, yeah, it's one thing to play physically. I mean, the Brazilian League is brutally physical, but it's the intensity of the Premier League, I think, that gets people. It's the quickness. They don't give you a second to stop on the ball. You know, I mean, in Brazil, they'll kick you 50 yards up in the air, but they'll give you 5 seconds before they do that. You know, in the Premier League, they're on you immediately. You know, so it's going to be interesting to see how he copes with that.
Well, we're all looking forward to seeing how Gabriel Jesus adapts to the Premier League. Very exciting player. We actually spoke to Guy's Comendetta as part of the Star Sixes competition, which is starting very soon, and we asked him about how his manager, Pep Guardiola, is adapting to the Premier League.
Well, I think I'm fairly criticised. I think also, in a way, this is his biggest challenge in his career, because it's not only arrived to any country, a new league, which is different to any other. Also, he has arrived in a club that is not made for him, that was made for another manager, and in a particular way that he's not used to. So in one season, he has to adjust all those things together. And it's not easy, because all these things require time. So it takes time for him to land and then gets his way, or gets his players to play in the way he really wants them to play. It's a matter of time, obviously, but in the meantime, we know how football works. You're going to get criticised for not winning every single game for 5-0, and that's hardly or very impossible. I think English football will be always English football. I remember, well, we had at Middlesbrough quite a universal team. There was not many English in the team, and we still play that football. If you look at any, if you look at any club in the Premier League, whether there's more or less British players, they're going to play this open football, attacking football. It's hard for them. And I think the best example is Man City with Pep Guardiola. We would like to have more control in football, but it's hard to get. And that's what it makes it so exciting, because regardless, the players, it's always a fascinating game to watch, because it's more concerned about attacking than actually defending. And hopefully that won't change much, so it still will be so exciting.
That was Guy's Comendetta talking to Squawker about Star Sixes and Pep Guardiola. Very interesting. Keep an eye out for Star Sixes. Chelsea versus Brentford. Chelsea have been playing the same 11 in the Premier League all season. This is a rare chance for Antonio Conte to rotate his squad, maybe give some of the ridiculous depth he has a shot, and against a Brentford side that aren't really having the best season. So it's on paper, it seems like a formality, doesn't it?
It kind of does. It's a bit of a local derby as well, so there'll be a bit of needle to it.
Bit of spice.
Yeah, the fans won't sort of be quiet at Stamford Bridge. They'll really want to get one over on Brentford, so it's hard to really look past them. Players like Batshuayi and Fabregas sort of itching to break into the team. They're going to have a real big point to prove, and Yeah, against Brentford, it's sort of the perfect match for them to do it. So it might be a bit of a big score this. I reckon Chelsea will really turn the screw. And,
oh, dear. Michy Batshuayi to get four. Wait, is he suspended?
Is he suspended?
I think I've just made that up.
I hope not, because...
Alternative facts.
Alternative facts, yeah.
Yeah, but I expect Fabregas and Batshuayi to properly put in a proper performance and make an impression on Conte. Whether he's not going to change his 11 because it's winning in the league. But you know, there's not going to be any chance because there's no other cup competitions for them. Mm. So it's literally now or never. If they go out, then these other players won't have any chance for the rest of the season to make an impression. So yeah, it'll be a big game for the fringe players at Chelsea, and you expect them to deliver against a team that's bereft of confidence like Brentford is at the moment.
It's an interesting point because they've been so bereft of other games that Batshuayi and Fabregas have actually turned out for the under-19s fairly often this season, which is just absurd. Imagine a World Cup winner stepping onto the pitch. Helen, Derby versus Leicester City. The big question on everyone's lips: will Leicester care? They're fighting relegation, and you know it's been pretty obvious since the start of the season that their focus is on the Champions League. Derby are seventh in the Championship, so maybe their focus is on getting into those playoff places. Who do you reckon is actually going to want to win this game?
I don't know. It's one of those games you really can't work out who's actually going to win. Mm. It could be one where they both go out and decide that they both want to win, or neither want to win, and it just ends up being an 0-0 draw, and they end up with a game that they didn't really want another one of. Mm.
Interesting.
I actually think Derby could win this. Because as much as they are seventh in the Championship, they're going to want to keep their momentum going. Because Derby have such a history of doing so well and then getting to like three quarters in the season and just completely crashing, that they're not going to want to now start losing momentum and then it kind of go into the league as well. So I think Derby are going to go to win.
We're going for a Derby win. That's what Helen Rowe Wilcox is saying. Final game that we just want to cover off, Man United versus Wigan.
Yeah.
United have a ridiculous squad, so they can rotate comfortably. Yeah. Their seventh choice centre mid is Bastian Schweinsteiger or something ridiculous. Fosu Mensah, I think, actually.
Fosu Mensah is like fifth choice at like five different positions.
It's ridiculous. Wigan are just hovering above the relegation zone in the Championship. Yeah. Their focus is on survival. Yeah. It's at home, it's at Old Trafford. It's the biggest banker I can think
of. It's a 3-0 United win, you know, that sort of thing. And only 3-0 because United can't shoot for toffee, and Mourinho doesn't really care too much about, as long as you win the game, I don't really care. No, you know, he'll rotate his team a little bit, although I don't know how much, because I think he'll probably put out more of the first team against Hull than he will. You'll probably see Fellaini, you might have Rashford up front, Rooney might get a go, Bastian Schweinsteiger will get like 10 minutes at the end, you know.
Standing ovation.
Everyone loves Basti, man. The guy just shows up, he's like, it's Bastian Schweinsteiger. It's incredible, what a job. I think United will win this pretty easily. The exciting thing is though, Axel Tuanzebe might play. There's been a lot of talk, Mourinho's been praising him a lot lately. And I mean, this is the ideal time if you're going to blood a youngster, and Mourinho, you know, he hates to do that, but if you're going to blood a youngster, it would be against a team like Wigan, you know, at home in the cup. Yeah, so it would be interesting to see if he gets a start, because I think that would at least give something that too interesting to what is otherwise, I mean, it's going to be a straightforward United win, probably.
Yeah, the Nick Powell derby, as it's been named since 2011. Let's move on to some transfer news. It is so close to the end of the transfer market, and there's just so many deals happening. Hush, it's been the most exciting January transfer window that in living memory, isn't it? I'm lying. But the big news is we need to figure out where Robert Snodgrass is going, okay? Because he's had a bid from West Ham, Middlesbrough, and Burnley, 7.5 million. They've bid to Hull for his services. Where's he going to go? What's going to happen here?
Right, if I was Robert Snodgrass,
okay, I'm imagining a 29-year-old Glaswegian.
I'd go to Burnley because I think that'd be the best fit for him personally. But if I was one of the three clubs, and you know they're sort of fighting for his sort of contract now because they've all had a bid accepted, West Ham have to sign him. I think if West Ham are going to lose Payet, I think as disappointing as it is for any West Ham fans to swap Payet for Snodgrass, you know, it's not very sort of...
Well, they've been all right without Payet.
Yeah, but I think Snodgrass is an excellent player in terms of his set-piece delivery is not as good as Payet. He's not as, you know...
Second to Payet.
Yeah, but he's not far behind in the Premier League, and his crossing ability with Andy Carroll back in form and the sort of direction that Slaven Bilic is taking West Ham in, he'd fit right in. He's got all the experience at Championship and Premier League level. He's a perfect fit for West Ham. But so I'd say West Ham should get that deal over the line and accept whatever deal they can and get Payet out and sort of move on from here.
Helen, do you agree with that?
Yeah, plus according to the BBC just before we came on air, they said that West Ham have had a £10 million offer accepted. So it seems like they might have upped the money. So it could looks like that could be where he's off
money
to.
Talks.
One potential factor in that might be that because they initially went in with something as low as £2 million, was it, for Snodgrass?
Hilarious.
Yeah, that, you know, it doesn't really say that much to Snodgrass' camp of how much West Ham wanted him if they're going to lowball him so much and then, you know, times that by five by the end of this sort of window.
One player who's not being lowballed, Mo, is Dimitri Payet. Marseille are desperate to get their hero back.
Yeah.
He's 30 and they're offering £23 million for him. Marseille and West Ham are just at a standoff. Payet would be joining Patrice Evra, who's just signed for Marseille on an 18-month deal.
Who wouldn't want to play with Patrice Evra?
A very good point. Maybe maybe Raymond Domenech.
Yeah. I was going to say don't go there, but yeah, Raymond Domenech probably wouldn't. No, I think it's strange to see Marseille. I mean, obviously they have the cash, but it's strange to see them so cavalier and so intense. I mean, I suppose Lyon made a big kind of statement with signing Memphis Depay. It's like, you know, we're not going to settle for where we are. And Monaco and Nice have shown that, you know, if you sign correctly, you know, PSG aren't... Zlatan has gone. PSG aren't the juggernaut that they were. I mean, they're still one of the best teams in the Ligue 1, but they're not the juggernaut they were. So it's, you know, if you make the right signs, and Payet is incredible. I mean, you know, I know he's 30, but he doesn't really rely on pace, so that's not going to be that much of an issue. The issue is motivation, and if he's really motivated to play for Marseille, which he clearly is. I mean, he's basically half passing it for West Ham right now, and he's still brilliant, one of the most creative players in Europe's top five leagues, you know. So
it does feel like a deal fueled by just romantic notions, though.
Yeah, I mean, but I mean, you know, football's built on romance, isn't it? Well, romance and money, and this has got both. So, you know,
like all good relationships.
Yeah, this has got, you've got romance, it's got money. You know, what do you want? This is a perfect transfer. No, I think eventually West Ham will. They'll sell him. I think basically they're waiting for Snodgrass. Once they get Snodgrass over the line, which I'm sure they will, because I think they'll pay what they have to get him. I think they'll be like, you know what, just give us £25 million and we'll be done with it. And Marseille will be like, yeah, you know what, go on then. And then they'll just... Because I think they both want it to happen. You know, I don't think West Ham want to be saddled with an unhappy player for another 6 months.
Yeah, strain on the wage bill.
There is some talk that Marseille might take him on loan for 6 months with an option to buy in the summer, which might be a good sort of...
Halfway house.
Yeah, for all parties. So, hopefully that gets
very
sorted
Serie A,
out.
Very Serie A,
in confusing Premier League transfer news, Helen, Gaston Ramirez has handed in a transfer request. There was scenes of utter confusion in the office when this happened. Where's he going to go?
I haven't got a clue.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
it's one of those things that kind of... It's a bit like when Font put in... that he wanted to leave Southampton, and that's kind of gone really quiet because no one really wanted him either. So he's now stuck having kind of told Southampton he doesn't want to be there. He's not getting any games either, and I kind of feel that if Gaston Ramirez isn't careful, that could kind of happen to him. But I think Middlesbrough probably will carry on playing him if he doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah. Well, the reason apparently he's handing a transfer request is that Middlesbrough, I couldn't believe this when I read this. I mean, this is transfer season, but this is a seriously credible link. Apparently, according to L'Equipe, PSG's Jesse Rodriguez could be on the way to Teesside.
Well, that would be something. It'd be a bit like, well, trying to compare it to Janinho going to Middlesbrough, but...
No, come on.
Yeah, it's a strange move. I really don't know what's going on at Borough at the moment, with Karanka's future uncertain at the moment because he had a bit of a go at the fans last weekend. I'm quite worried for them, really. Gaston Ramirez is possibly... Bar Negredo, the most talented player, the sort of talisman in the team, taking him out of that team and putting Jesse Rodriguez in, who, you know, he's going to take more than 6 months to settle into the Premier League. He didn't really do much at PSG under Unai Emery, not given much chances, but still, if you can't sort of make it work in that sort of situation where you're in one of the better teams with everything working for you, working in that Karanka system where, you know, there isn't that much room for expansive play. They're very workmanlike and they rely on Gaston Ramirez and Negredo to sort of get the one goal, the two goal, 2-1 sort of score lines. yeah, it's confusing. Pretty dark days at Borough.
Hesse's taking the sort of accelerated Bojan Krkić career path. Yeah.
Hesse's an incredible talent, but he's a
difficult personality.
He's a bit of a diva, you know. Basically, and I mean, the move to PSG was always a terrible idea because there's, I mean, if you know anything about Hesse, there's no way he's sitting through Unai Emery's tactical briefings like, yeah, okay, and taking down what Spring said. He doesn't. He plays football in a very sort of laissez-faire. I'm brilliant, so I'm just going to play it sort of way. Same as Gerard Deulofeu. You know, that's why these brilliantly talented wingers, they've got so much skill and ability, they can't seem to find a home anywhere because they're so opposed to the modern way that most coaches, especially in like Spain, do things, you know. Mm-hmm. Tactics heavy, you know, focus, concentrate, you know. It's like they'd be great in the 90s. Hesse and Deulofeu would be two of the best young players in the world, and they'd be at the very best clubs, and they'd be, you know, because it was more laissez-faire in the 90s, more free, you know. Now it's not. Hesse, I mean, you know, there's rumors he was going to Las Palmas. Actually, I think that would fit him better because that's even less pressure at Las Palmas, even less sort of, it's more freedom to do what you want, and he's from Las Palmas, so yeah, it's a good place for him. But I mean, wherever he ends up, I think he just needs games and just the complete trust of the manager to get the best out of him.
Well, we'll see how that develops. Obviously, PSG willing to let him go because they've signed Gonçalo Quedas from Benfica for £25 million. Helen, final transfer news we want to cover off. Crystal Palace and Big Sam still trying to sign Patrick Van Aanholt for about, I think it's about £11 million they're talking about now. And they're also in for Robbie Brady. That's Big Sam's approach is like, let's get some left-sided players in no matter what, ignoring the entire issue with the spine of his team.
I'm going to say, it's interesting they've kind of gone for two players that basically play in the same place. So do they haven't kind of come out yet and said, do they want both of them? Have they gone in for Robbie Brady thinking that they're not going to get Van Aanholt? I mean, he said at the beginning of the transfer window that he wanted defenders. That was all he was interested in, was defenders, because they need to stop letting goals in. But they really need both of them? I don't know.
Never have enough left backs. Never.
No, and they're both very attacking left backs as well, which don't really sort of fit what Crystal Palace kind of need at the moment, because they've got
decent, they need defenders.
Yeah, they need defenders that defend first rather than sort of the sort of front foot defenders, which Van Aanholt and Brady are. They almost sort of can play wing-back roles. So, yeah, it's hard to make sense of it, really. But I'm sure Big Sam has a plan. And
I like the way you're live trying to make sense of Big Sam's transfer plans.
Yeah, I really don't get it. Understand. Yeah, it's difficult. And even their move for Carl Jenkinson really didn't make sense, even though that's fallen through now. That I couldn't see what value.
I think
he
really likes
them.
Carl Jenkinson.
Yeah.
Didn't he get him take him to West Ham? Didn't he?
Yeah. I saw good a rumor lad. This week that they're going to take Chris Samba on trial to see what sort of shape.
Come on now, love Chris Samba. We've managed to keep the transfer section of the Squawker Talker relatively unsilly. You've just made it silly.
I'm just sure. What's going on at Palace is a bit scattergun at the moment. Yeah. So yeah,
we'll see. Yeah. Need something to turn around. It's time for everyone's favorite Friday feature. Would you rather? That's when you're supposed to cheer. Thanks very much. Would you rather, we're going to start this off Liverpool themed-ish. Would you rather win the League Cup or the FA Cup, or would you rather finish top four in the Premier League? Mo.
Oh, win the cup every time. Win a trophy. Come on. I mean, you know, top four, fantastic, Champions League. Hooray, well done. But, you know, Arsenal fans will tell you, you know, that Arsenal fans haven't got... You know, you look at them on Twitter, right? They've only gotten really, really happy the last few years because they've won the FA Cup. Now it's the FA Cup. Okay, you could argue no one cares about it, but people care about it. When you're there, you want to win it. You know, winning a trophy every day.
Okay, Helen?
No, I'm completely in agreement with that.
Yeah?
You don't get a medal for coming fourth, so
true.
You definitely want to win.
I'd agree, but only in 90% of the cases. If you're Liverpool, Tottenham or Arsenal, or Liverpool or Tottenham have not been in the Champions League the last few seasons, I think they'd rather be in the Champions League than win a cup, personally.
Would you rather, not would they rather?
I've already had two FA Cups with Arsenal in the last few years, so I'd rather finish in the Champions League again, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Just fair being enough. Contrarian.
Next, Helen, coming to you. Snodgrass-based, West Ham, Burnley or Middlesbrough? And the current team. Imagine you're Robert Snodgrass. You're 29, you're Scottish, you've got a beard. Which club are you thinking?
Burnley, as much as most of my fellow Blackpool fans will probably kill me for saying that.
They're the Antichrist.
I don't know, it's just Burnley. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Burnley is, it's just one of those teams, they've come up, they've done really well, and they've got such a great kind of fan base at Turf Moor, and they've made Turf Moor into an absolute... castle that no one, just people are really struggling to go there. And I think it's one of those places you just want to, Sean Dyche is brilliant as well. Mm. And I think he'd be one of those managers that really does get the best out of his players. I think it really is a good team. Mm. I'd go to Burnley.
Okay. Hush, I think you sort of answered this earlier,
didn't
you?
Yeah, I agree with Helen. It's Burnley, definitely. Especially because you sort of know the manager's going to be there for a few seasons and everything's set in place. They've got a sort of new training system now. And yeah, it's a club that's the best run out of the three. So yeah, I'd say Burnley.
Okay. Mo?
West Ham.
Why West Ham?
Lob the ball up to Andy Carroll. The guy will get like 20 assists.
That's a good point.
Just spend the whole game just cross to Carroll. It's just goals on a plate right there.
I didn't think of the Snodgrass Carroll assist.
Every time, man.
Yeah.
Every time.
That's a good time. The final one is Arsene Wenger themed. This is actually a little sub quiz. Is can you guess which chief football writer in the Times suggested one of these as punishment for Arsene Wenger? Anyway, would you rather, Mo, ref 10 non-league games or be a ball boy in the Championship for 10 games?
I'd ref non-league.
Ref non-league?
How can that be good? You could probably insult players back in non-league. They probably wouldn't care. So.
Yeah, that's a good point. Helen?
I'd go with being a ball girl, technically.
Ball girl, yeah.
Mainly because I'd probably be a terrible ref because I get far too distracted. I'm not fit enough. So.
Okay, fair enough. Hush?
I'd be a ball boy in the Championship, definitely. It seems like less responsibility. It seems less scary.
Yeah. You'll be happy to know that it was Matt Dickinson from The Times who suggested that Arsene Wenger should be sent down to the non-league to ref 10 games as a sort of community service punishment for pushing forth.
You know what?
Fourth ref Anthony Taylor.
Well,
last
I think
weekend.
That is ridiculous. I would love to see Arsene Wenger ref non-league.
I think we all would.
That would be amazing.
He wouldn't help himself. He'd start coaching the players. He'd be telling them that they're doing a good job.
Don't stand here. Do it like this. Just pass it that way.
The Wenger witch hunt continues. It's question time. Now, we asked our very, very strong following, all of our fans, if they had any questions for the pod. So let's just get straight into these. I'm going to go to Mo first with this one. Gus Young asked, shout out to Gus Young, should Liverpool only use their high-pressing / counter-attacking system versus stronger teams?
Yes. I mean, that's exactly what I was saying earlier. That's, you know, against weaker sides, they need to figure out a different way to play football. You know, then they had the players do it. It was really weird last night. Gino Wijnaldum didn't start. He's arguably, after Coutinho and Lallana, their most creative, penetrative player that he could actually do something. Liverpool need to figure out how to do this because, again, you can't press with intensity every game in the Premier League season. You'll be exhausted. And, you know, some teams are just going to sit back and park it and just not leave you any space. So, you need to learn, figure out a new way to press. So, you know, figure it out. That's basically it.
Do you reckon Liverpool need a player like sort of like a David Silva or Fabregas or a Christian Eriksen or a Santi Cazorla who can control the play in the final
Mario
third?
Mario Götze. They need a player like that. That's exactly what they need. You know, Firmino is a false nine. He's quite creative, but only when he drops out of space and moving around like that. Coutinho can be creative, but let's face it, he's going to go to Barcelona in the summer. You know, so they need... Lallana's very, very good, but only when everyone else is playing very, very good. They need someone who's just going to... Everything's going to... Not necessarily flow through him, but just he's going to make everyone better around him. Like Wijnaldum, but more advanced and better.
Okay, Gus, let's hope that answers that question. Next question is from Chris Armband. Shout out to Chris Armband. Middle name captains. Hush, Donnarumma has 18 months left on his contract. And you guess who's his agent? Mino Raiola.
Oh yeah.
What are we thinking there? Because he, on paper, Gianluigi Donnarumma is sort of he's a lifer at Milan. But do you reckon he might be tempted? Milan. He's probably above Milan's level, isn't he?
Knowing Raiola's sort of previous work, he's probably going to get a few offers. But if I was going to give any advice to Donnarumma, it's stay at Milan. Sort of don't. I'm not saying do a Buffon and stay there your whole career or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But
for now.
Yeah, just make yourself a, you know, fully-fledged Italy international, maybe win a cup or two in Milan, you know, become a proper player and then sort of look to leave. And we've seen the way the Premier League and the press and everyone treats goalkeepers over here. I can't imagine he would last very long before he'd be absolutely scrutinised to hell. So, yeah, stay at Milan and, you know, build up a reputation and then maybe a big move to La Liga or Bayern Munich or Premier League might come up later on, but for now, I think it'd be career suicide for him to leave Milan. The sort of progression he's making, he's got 50 caps for Milan, and he's only, what, 18 now? So, yeah, he's on the right track there, so leaving now would be stupid for him.
Okay, fair enough. Helen, we've got a question from Tommy Caudry. Actually, I'll ask this to the whole pod, but I'll start with Helen. Tommy Caudry, big up Tommy Caudry. Which average footballer do you inexplicably love? The example he gives is Jay Rodriguez. I'm not sure how average Jay Rodriguez is, but is there an average footballer that you love for some reason that you can't quite, you know, you can't quite put your finger on?
David Vaughan at
David Vaughan.
Yes, at Notts Forest. He's one of those players that never gets any glory, but he will give 110%. And as soon as he's been struggling with injuries recently, and as soon as he doesn't play, you can tell he's not on the pitch. He's one of those players that just mops up everybody else's mistakes and just gets on with it without really kind of people realising just how much of an impact he makes.
I did not see David Vaughan.
That was a very good pick.
That's caught me cold. Mo, which average footballer do you love for some inexplicable reason?
Vitolo from Sevilla.
Oh, Vitolo, nice. Yeah.
Massive guy, you know, big shoulders, you know, broad, powerful winger. You know, doesn't really get a lot of goals or assists. It can be missed inexplicable one-on-ones, but just tries constantly. Just runs and runs all day long. Makes unselfish runs off the ball. You know, Sevilla are just so much better because of him. And it's not even like he's the guy. Nasri's getting all the glory in Zonzi. He makes so many off the ball runs. So much. Tactical width he gives his sides. He's playing for Spain now because he does that, and Lopetegui recognises how valuable that is.
I love Arriving Vitolo. Under Sampaoli.
Yeah, I love Vitolo. Arriving.
Okay. Hush, average footballer that you love for some inexplicable reason.
Where's Houlihan? He's just a joy to watch.
I'm sorry, what?
Where's Houlihan? He's not average, he's awesome.
Where's Houlihan? Is one of the finest technicians currently playing in the Championship.
I was going to say Championship level. Okay, I've got a few more names here. I don't insult any of these guys now because I've got Southampton Stephen Davis on here.
Yeah,
because he's one of the most underrated players in Premier League history.
Premier League history.
Yes, I've said it. He's excellent at what he does. He's so composed. He makes his teammates play better. Similar to what Ellen said about David Vaughan, he has that influence that's intangible, that, you know, calms everyone down, makes everything tick along. And yeah, I'm a massive fan. Whenever I play Football Manager or FIFA or any of the
straight things, in for Stephen Davis.
I'm always straight in for Stephen Davis.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I love Mo saying that, backing up the Houlihan, so you can't pick Houlihan, he's average, when he picked Vitolo.
Exactly, yeah.
The multi-Europa League winner.
Yeah. Come on. Vitolo's like Pedro, but like 6'2" and just really broad shouldered.
And he's not average.
Well, where's Houlihan?
Where's Houlihan's a lot more average.
Plays for Norwich in the Championship, so come on.
The final question we've got is another one from Tommy Caudry. He just asked a couple of good ones. I'll come to Mo on this one. Why is 4-3-3-1 the go-to formation of the last 4 or 5 years? And what is the next tactical trend? Be succinct.
It's the go-to formation because it's very easy. It's just so simple and easy to do. And you don't need to have any sort of adventure. Two defensive midfielders, specialists. You just find guys that can run and tackle. It's very simple. Two wingers, you can find either two forwards and just play them wide, because you've got so much cover with defensive midfielders. Or if you're a real you know, defensive-minded guy, you can have two wide midfielders that didn't put them further forward. You know, you get to have one attacking player who just doesn't have to do anything defensively. It's indulgent, number 10. It's a very, very easy formation to use. That's basically, you can do a lot of interesting things with it. Arsenal, for example, have done a lot of very interesting things with 4-2-3-1. I mean, not now, but, you know, 2 years ago. But it's just a very simple formation. Next tactical trend, I mean, after pressing, you know, you got to figure it's going to be direct play, basically. That's what's going to come back, is going to be very fast wing play. Because you're looking at now, three at the back is now suddenly coming into vogue, and you've got high pressing and teams doing that. So the answer to that is just, okay, how do you beat a press? Ball over the top. That's what's going to come into play. And, you know, the one team that have sort of almost figured that out is Barcelona. Like,
yes,
they're playing so many direct balls now and starting direct counterattacks. It's like Luis Enrique sort of sussed out that, yeah, you know what, teams are going to come up and come. So, you know what, hit the ball over them.
Yeah. Well, there you go, Tommy. The next tactical trend is long ball football, which nobody expected. last thing we've got to cover off before the end of the pod, we're almost out of time, is European match to watch this weekend. The weekend's coming up, Hush. Everyone's sort of putting together their plan for the weekend. They're cancelling this, they're pretending they're going to go to that, they're umming and ahhing about whether or not to go to the gym, but they're going to watch some football. Which game must they watch?
You've got to watch Paris Saint-Germain versus Monaco this weekend. The Ligue 1 title race is looking pretty good now. There's only 3 points between the top three. We've seen the story with Nice and Benfica and Balotelli and sort of what they've been doing. And PSG have clawed back a lot of the gap after they fell behind really quite badly at the beginning of the season. But now, like I said, they're just 3 points in behind. And Monaco have been excellent. Like, we've seen the
goals.
Yeah, we've seen Falcao somewhere near his best again.
In your face, Lou Van Gaal.
Yeah, and 64 goals already in the league. That's
not Falcao, Monaco.
No, yeah, that's a team. And that's more than anyone in Europe's top five leagues. Mm. And I think it'll be a very good barometer ahead of the Champions League match against City coming up in a couple of weeks. So if they can get something against PSG or just show how far they've come this season, then you know, you wouldn't write them off against City a few weeks later. So yeah, I think that'd be very interesting to watch.
Out for that. Helen, what's your European match to watch this weekend?
My choice is Real Madrid v Real Sociedad, which probably sounds an obvious choice picking Madrid, but after going out of the Copa del Rey, then they're going to want to kind of come back with a strong performance and show that they are still the excellent team that they are. Plus, Real Sociedad will have 24 hours less rest time with them playing Barcelona tonight, so they could be tired, despite the fact that they're doing really well. They are fifth in the league, but surely it's got to be Real Madrid's turn to come back and kind of get some strength and some... Just come back and kind of...
assert their authority.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Mo?
I'm going Espanyol Sevilla. Yeah, Espanyol, like, you know, they've hit a wall. They're playing really well. They're a really, really good run of games, and they played Barcelona and kind of, you know, started falling apart. But they're a combative side, mostly just because it's Sevilla. Sevilla under Sampaoli are just fantastic
to watch.
They won five in a row since they weirdly lost to Granada. You know, they beat Real Madrid, which was an incredible achievement. You know, they're the first team to beat them 40 games. You know, and they really should have beat them in the cup as well, like a few days earlier.
Sergio Ramos
is the man, isn't he, really? you know, Panenka, anyway, you know, let's not get into that. Yeah, it's just, no, so they're fantastic. Well, they beat Real Madrid, they beat Real Sociedad. They beat Real Sociedad 4-0 2 weeks ago. Like, incredible, incredible result. They played Osasuna last week. Osasuna bottom of the league. You're thinking, okay, it's going to be a boring, like, 2-0 win. They won 4-3. It was absolutely brilliant fun to watch. Yeah, I mean, you know, they won 4-3. Ibora, you know, scored two goals, scored an own goal. They're just entertainment, pure entertainment. I think they'll probably play down to Espanyol a little bit, which will result in a more fun game, really open, probably loads of goals, like 4-2 or something.
Hey, well, set your VHS encoder to record those games if you're out. All of those using VHS, Betamax, otherwise, or Laserdisc for those of you in the Channel Islands. Thanks very much to all of our guests, Mo Butt, Helen Rowe Wilcox, journalist at PA. Thanks for joining us, and Hosh Karai. Thanks very much for listening. Please subscribe on iTunes. We'll be back again on Monday. Greg Johnson will be taking you through the FA Cup results and all the games that we've been telling you to look forward to. Thanks very much for listening. Bye bye.